Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's 12:10. I'm John Williams. The Wintrust Business Lunch is produced by Pete Zimmerman. We appreciate you tuning in. And also just a sort of late thank you to all of the instant reporters who phoned in with their sightings of the Blue Angels in the last half hour. From Hammond and Gary, Indiana, through the northwest side and back downtown, Ryan Burrow with his call as they were streaking overhead by the lakefront. But it was nice to get all of the sound from those of you who were happy to see the planes flying overhead, excited. And a friend of mine, Nancy Butel, sent me video that her kids sent her, and they're healthcare workers. They were at their place of employment. They had the cameras or phones pointed to the sky and caught great video of them streaking overhead. So, Lordy, who knew this would be that exciting? The Air and Water Show, now that I think about it, has not been canceled for the city this year. Am I right about that? Boy, all of a sudden it just dawns on me that I don't know the answer to that. Pete, double check on that. It's hard to imagine that they haven't, right? I mean, that's a million people, literally, on the lakefront. So my guess is that that has been indefinitely postponed or canceled for 2020. But off the top of my head, I realize I don't know the answer to that. John Najarian joins us now for a segment and a half, let's say, if you're keeping score at home, the founder of MarketRebellion.com. It's a financial news, education, and subscription site, MarketRebellion.com. Hey, John, it's John Williams. How are you doing? Welcome to the show.
It's great to be back with you, John. And I'm doing well. I hope you are. You're in good voice today.
Well, it's nice of you to say. You don't happen to know off the top of your head if the Air and Water Show has been postponed or canceled for this year, do you?
I have not heard, no. But I would suspect that you're right if they take out Lollapalooza, and I think that's an even bigger impact commerce-wise for the city. I think they're going to take this one out too, sadly.
Yeah, it's funny because you don't think about the Air and Water Show as a commerce point, but Lollapalooza, a lot of money gets spent on the tickets, on the concessions, on the fees that the Lollapalooza producers pay to the city. Why do we let them close off and then be trash the park for a week? And it's because it's a big money generator. A lot of people come through the city for that one that aren't here otherwise. So different events that way.
Exactly. There's a lot of significant dollars that get spent on both, quite frankly, but obviously Lala's here for 4 days as well, rather than just Saturday, Sunday for the Air and Water Show.
Pete just whispered in my ear, it's not known yet whether the Air and Water Show will be canceled or postponed.
So cross our fingers.
Technically, that means it is still on, but I wouldn't put my lawn chairs in the back of the station wagon just yet. Let's talk about some stocks.
Sorry.
Stocks are rising, actually a little bit today. They're up, they're down, they're basically even. What's going on in the markets generally?
Wow, there's actually a lot. There's this very strong push into technology that's continued throughout the coronavirus shutdown. And obvious beneficiaries were Netflix and Zoom and, to a lesser extent, many of the FANG stocks. And now, as people are expanding their view, they're going into stocks like Logitech, which you might not realize is, since they're a peripheral provider, they do everything from, of course, mice, wireless keyboards. We've all upgraded, not perhaps all of us, but an awful lot of us have upgraded systems at home. We've also bought a lot of their webcams, since so many of us want something better than the crummy one that's built into your laptop or your PC. So they have traded to a new all-time high, Logitech has, L-O-G-I. And I thought one of the really big stories of the day might be this Grubhub being approached perhaps by Uber. You and I think just last week, John, were talking about how much these food delivery companies take of that check. And in some states, they've obviously limited that to 15%, but they most of these services are up around 30%.
Yeah, right.
So the restaurants were really, I guess, viewing this as marketing, as well as, of course, a way to keep revenue flowing. But during Corona, many of them will have to cut back to 15% because of that state mandate in certain states. I don't know if ours is one. I don't believe it is yet.
Yeah, I've not heard
but
that. Yeah.
Today, they made a run, apparently Uber is the they, at Grubhub. And Grubhub shares just were incredibly active in the pre-market and in the regular trading session. They were halted, and then they reopened $13 higher on the rumors that they're going to be taken out by Uber.
John Najarian's on a phone line, and it's interesting to me that that stock is that attractive. I can understand why they would be maybe needed, but I also thought they'd gotten beaten up enough that maybe there'd be people would be so aggressive about it. Let's continue this conversation in a minute. John Najarian from MarketRebellion.com. John Najarian joins us for his weekly visit. By the way, there's a word that is you're hearing bandied about a little bit, and it's inflation versus deflation. I guess that's two words. But what are you hearing or seeing on that front, John?
Well, I have heard in certain parts of the country that meat was in short supply, and they might be seeing some inflation there. But I've seen precious little inflationary pressures here in Chicago. I don't know about you, John, but I have not heard a lot of people discussing it or heard people complaining as they normally would about inflation.
The flip of that is not good either, right? I mean, deflation is not good.
Right. Yep. And that's what the Fed is trying to avoid by flushing the system with so much money. They're trying to keep people from hoarding cash and hunkering down and cutting spending, which puts us into a deflationary cycle. So one of the ways that they've dealt with that is, of course, Congress has gone out and offered an extra, I think it's $640 on top of the unemployment benefit that folks would get that have been sadly laid off and or furloughed. I think the additional monies are out there basically to not only support those people, but support the businesses that those people are expected to support as far as their spending and so forth. Especially with some sort of forbearance on their rent or their mortgage.
Yeah. We have seen some prices go up in the Chicago area for chicken, beef, and eggs, maybe for some obvious reasons with the problems in those industries. But otherwise, I haven't seen prices go up a lot. And obviously, oil prices have, gasoline prices at the pump have stayed steady or gone down. What are you hearing about oil and gas prices these days?
Well, Saudi yesterday said that they would be cutting in June, and cutting in June obviously is something that would be supportive of crude oil at these levels, but it's something that would also introduce some of that inflation that you're talking about, John. This is, I think, the second day in a row that we've seen a rally. It reversed yesterday from a sell-off to a rally on the news of that production cut, even though it's out in June. So it's not an immediate impact, but people, futures traders in particular, are already reacting to it.
I was trying to figure out what exactly all of that means. That is, how much of an indicator of the health of the economy is gas prices, if in fact you're manipulating the supply that way so as to maybe keep the prices up. When they go down, 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 while that might be good for some consumers, it's an indication that business isn't very robust and the demand is down. Well, if you boost the price back up, that doesn't mean the economy is necessarily recovered.
Right. Although, and this will be one for history books, obviously, John, but the fact that the prince over in Saudi Arabia, Bin Salman, had decided when the world was going upside down because of COVID already, when he decided to have that fight with Putin, and see who could hurt the other worse, and basically started overproducing. In other words, it wasn't just production at the same level as before and airlines cutting back and eventually almost stopping and consumers about the same. It was that they overproduced like crazy to hurt each other. And the collective result was that they hurt themselves dramatically, and they obviously came after U.S. shale producers in a big way, as well as those tar sands producers up in Canada that are almost, I mean, Canada probably is going to suffer much worse because of this, because that is the most expensive way to get energy out of the ground is through tar sands. And what Bin Salman did, like I say, that'll be part of some sort of history book when people say nobody would act against their own best interest to that extent. But he clearly did. And cutting back again now is probably something that was way overdue.
You mentioned some travel industries, and I was listening to our Peter Greenberg, who was doing his travel show over the weekend here at WGN. He was talking about some strategies that airlines might use, and I believe it was Frontier that tried this and have since stopped. But it was, if you've got three seats, nobody wants to sit in the middle seat. How about we sell you that middle seat for $39 with the promise that nobody uses it? Which on the one hand sounds like a good idea, but it's also a way to profiteer off of people's concern about a deadly virus. If it's so deadly that you'll sell it to me to keep it empty, maybe you ought to eat the $39 and not charge me for that level of safety. I don't know what your thoughts about that are, what you're hearing about that, but if people are afraid to fly, yeah.
That's not the way to get them back on planes, for sure. I agree. And I suspect that what we'll end up seeing, at least in the short term, is some sort of, we've seen it all overseas already, some sort of a plastic shield between seats and the middle seat open. So, for instance, when you see that, you're probably familiar with it in business class. You might see basically a separator that raises between the two business class seats. I think you might see that on even domestic carriers to get folks back flying again and that middle seat open.
I was talking to a travel agent over the weekend, and she said that one of the things that some European hotels are doing, and maybe premium hotels in the United States would consider this as well, and that is they will book every other room, not every single room. So literally socially distance the rooms, and then they would not book the room on consecutive days. That is, if you checked out on Thursday, they wouldn't check anybody in for 24 hours. So it'd be every other room with a full day in between so as to allow cleaning or let the virus settle. There'll be no airborne particulates, stuff like that. That means that they're promising themselves a 50% haircut, but 50% is a lot better than the occupancy they have right now.
True. True. And as a guy who used to own restaurants, I know that I could not survive. In fact, I had three restaurants at one time, two of which went out of business, despite the fact that we had like 80-85% occupancy. You can't make money in the restaurant business. Now, hotels, different story. I don't claim to be an expert on that. But I know that you can't make money in the restaurant business if you have 50% of what, unless you have a dramatic cut to your rent. Because rent is where most restaurants pay, you know, that's their biggest cost, rent and food. Because of the tipping, you can end up getting good staff for less than minimum wage. I'm not encouraging it, I'm just saying that's a fact. And so it's not that the labor cost is more. What you worry about is that your rent and food costs are too much. And so if that rent stays at the same level, you can't run that restaurant at 50% capacity. Perhaps you can still survive as a hotelier, but not as a restaurateur.
Well, then maybe the president of the Restaurant Association, who talked to John Cass last week, just wants the door open, because he said Let's let restaurants reopen for dining at 25% capacity starting June 1st with all sorts of protective measures in place. And if every one of those tables at 25% were full, you're telling me they're still not going to make any money.
No way they make money. No way. Even with takeout, as much as takeout has gone up, 25 or 50% are both non-starters. That will not work. I'd love to have him show me the math on that, because the only one that we survived with, John, was a dive bar, where we served Mexican food, and most people drank rather than ate. That's the only way you can survive, is to have a massive bar tab, not food service at 50% capacity.
Well, another number that you just can't know, I guess, until they try is what percentage of the people are willing to go back anyway? Would it be 25%?
Right.
Maybe you don't even fill the tables at 25% capacity. I don't know what they, I don't know what percentage of the American public would go back into a restaurant at the end of the month.
Right. A lot of young people probably will, John.
Yeah.
I think it'll be more the experiential crowd that we already know is there out there looking for exactly that, that experience. And I think they will go back. Perhaps many of the older, more moneyed clientele will not.
John Najarian is the founder of MarketRebellion.com. You've been entertaining me, John. Is there anything else I didn't ask you about that you absolutely want to get out of here in the last 30 seconds?
Keep an eye on DraftKings. This is a stock that just came public. I think we know what it does. You know, they're fantasy football, but it's a way of gaming as well. And people are betting that this one's going to explode. So keep an eye on that one. DraftKings. DKNG is the symbol. Very active today.
John Najarian at MarketRebellion.com. Thanks, John. We'll visit again.
Thank you, sir.
As always, it's 12:30. This is WGN. I'm interested in what innovations are taking place to try and get you and I back into the workplace, back into the restaurants and bars. We'll visit in a little while with some of our friends from Chicago Inno. It'll be Catherine Davis's turn, the associate editor there. 12:34, this is the Wind Trust Business Lunch. Business is going to look different. And let's start with the conversation now with Catherine Davis, associate editor at Chicago Inno. Chicago Inno regulars on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I don't know if you have a specific place to go with this, but don't you think, Catherine, that businesses as well as restaurants are all now thinking, how do I innovate, if you will, my workplace, my restaurant space, so that it's safe for both my clients and my employees? That must be the challenge for business managers right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just based on what I've been seeing, you know, from our sources and in the news, you know, a lot of companies are trying to come up with ways to, you know, have their employees back in the office safely. So sometimes that means like testing or taking the temperatures of employees as they enter the building, you know, and I know that a lot of companies are just kind of pushing back those dates on when they're asking employees to even come back. I think like the farthest out I've seen is like 2021. Some companies are kind of pushing that date too.
I also know of some businesses, one in particular that I spoke to, I'll just say one, but their plan is to not renew their lease. They're going to instead invest money in the technology for their employees to be hooked up with their computers and their phones. A lot of them just grab their laptops and cell phones and are operating out of their kitchens. That's not a way to run a business. So rather than paying money to a landlord, let's just innovate people's homes so they can do their jobs from home indefinitely. That strikes me as a very interesting idea, and what a massive shift that will be for the people that own all of that real estate.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, this just thinking about kind of in the tech and startup world, you know, that could have big implications for something like a WeWork, right? Because, you know, oftentimes they're, you know, renting office space to maybe just even one person. A lot of times it's small companies. But if, you know, those companies, those individuals can now, you know, work seamlessly from home, you imagine that, you know, a big kind of real estate company like WeWork would face some serious challenges there.
Or maybe it would be to their advantage. The company I'm speaking of in particular It's about a dozen employees. They're not going to renew the lease at the office they have, but they are now going to be WeWork customers, and they're going to have a minimal plan for when they do want to meet with a small group of clients, if they do need to all be face-to-face. But it'll be 5 days a month, maybe, rather than 365 days a year. So who knows how that can go. I also saw on your website how a phone booth startup built a protective booth to test for coronavirus. What is this story about?
Yeah, so this is a fairly new Chicago startup. They're called Pillar Booth. They launched, you know, earlier this year, making customizable phone booths for office spaces. So, you know, kind of those singular phone booths you can go in, get away from the open office environment, take a personal phone call, or, you know, just to have some privacy. And, you know, now that nobody's in offices, they were like, we kind of have to pivot at this point because nobody's buying phone booths for offices if no one's in offices. So they've used their concept and they're now building what they're calling protect booths. It's basically a three-walled booth made of plexiglass. In the front of each booth, there's reusable double-layer latex gloves. And they are putting these in hospitals, in ICUs, in pharmacy clinics, helping, you know, healthcare workers test for contagious diseases like COVID-19.
Ah, is there a market for that? Are they selling those units?
Yeah, so they are selling them. They're about they're under $2,000. They also are donating a handful of them and kind of looking for partners to help finance those donations.
So I would come into the booth, stick my hands through the gloves, and then I'm protected while I'm doing some procedure, maybe a test on somebody.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the idea here is that they're reusable. You can sanitize them so that doctors or, you know, physicians aren't going through as many pairs of gloves and protective face shields and, you know, those kinds of that kind of equipment that's already a shortage here.
I'm looking at the picture of this on your site. It is the most bizarre looking thing. You're right. It looks like a phone booth, but there's two arms sticking out of it where the person would put their hands in and then they would work on you, say, take the test, give the test, but they would never be exposed to you because they're spending their work time in, I don't know how long they're going to be in that poor booth, but they would be completely isolated from everybody. Rather than isolating all of us, isolate that person. What a clever idea. Boy, people do know how to pivot, don't they?
They sure do. You know, the interesting thing about this founder is that this isn't his first startup idea. He was actually the founder of LearnCore, which he sold to another local tech company in 2018 for $50 million. He also founded the local startup hub Catapult. So, you know, he's kind of been around the Chicago tech scene for a while now and I think has experience with pivoting when necessary.
Why is Cars.com having trouble?
Yeah, so Cars.com, you know, we wrote about them last week because they announced in their latest earnings report that they laid off 170 employees. You know, they originally were kind of just planning to furlough about 250, but that turned into 170 cuts permanently. You know, they cited challenges from COVID. So, you know, they were seeing a decline in national advertising. You know, also people aren't buying cars at the same rate that they probably were before the crisis. You know, a lot of people are out of jobs. A lot of people are, you know, tightening their finances, and I don't think are purchasing cars at the same rate that they were. So, you know, these aren't the first layoffs for Cars.com. Last year, they cut 126 employees. You know, they said it was just kind of a downsizing strategies, but, you know, it'll be interesting to follow them and see how they recover from this going forward.
And maybe unrelated to this, maybe related to this, there's some Bitcoin news on your site. What's that all about?
Yeah, so we wrote about Digital Mint. They're a Chicago startup that's making it easier to buy Bitcoin or, you know, cryptocurrency through ATMs. So this is kind of interesting just because most of the time when people are buying Bitcoin, they do so on an app. They do it electronically. With digital mint, the idea is that you're going to a physical ATM in, you know, a convenience store, a grocery store, and putting in cash to redeem Bitcoin electronically. So it's just kind of a different way of doing business there. They say it helps serve the underbanked and also prevents instances of fraud. Right now they have partnerships with dozens of companies. You know, you may be familiar with Circle K. You could go in there and use one of these digital mint ATMs.
I presume I'd get a receipt. Would I get some sort of coin voucher or some card? How would I represent the value of the transaction?
Yeah, you know, so the idea is that you already have a digital Bitcoin wallet. These are offered through, you know, a multitude of services. One, for instance, is called Jax. So the idea is, you know, when you're redeeming cash for your Bitcoin at the ATM, you put in your information, tell it, what Bitcoin wallet you're using, and it would be placed in there for you to use electronically going forward.
So really, it just looks like a deposit, in other words.
Yeah, exactly. You're not really getting anything out of it. It's not like your traditional ATM.
Catherine Davis is the associate editor at Chicago Inno. Nice to talk to you. Good reporting, Catherine. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks, John.
It's 12:42. Steve Bertrand's in the WGN Radio Newsroom. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. So is it time for a rush on tortillas? An El Milagro tortilla factory closed for 2 weeks for a deep clean after a worker died of the coronavirus, now says it will remain closed indefinitely for a construction project. The company has said the temporary closure would cut production of corn tortillas by 75%. Bret Hart will become president of United Airlines when Scott Kirby takes over as CEO later this month. He was the interim CEO in 2015 when Oscar Munoz had his heart transplant. And Chicago Inno says a Chicago startup is taking on big tobacco with a new smokeless product that gives users a buzz without additional harmful elements found in traditional dip products. Black Buffalo's created a smokeless tobacco alternative that has the same look, feel, smell, and experience as traditional dipping products, and it just raised nearly $10 million. I'm Steve Bertrand. That's the Wintrust Business Minute.
By the way, Steve's got a market update for you.
Markets have moved negative. The Dow's down 113 points, the NASDAQ down 13, and the S&P 500 down 16.
On the agribusiness scene, this is Orion Samuelson.
A big day for agriculture from a report standpoint. One of the major reports of the springtime issued by the U.S. Department of Agriculture this morning. Corn supplies will rise to their highest level in 33 years, with demand for ethanol remaining weak following this year's massive corn planting acreage, according to the government report. USDA, in its first forecast for the 2021 marketing year, based on its March acreage outlook, put corn stocks at a huge 3,318,000,000 bushels. And if realized, that will be the fourth biggest ever and the largest stockpile since the 1987-88 marketing year. USDA projected 2021 soybean ending stocks at 405 million bushels and 2021 wheat ending stocks at 909 million bushels. And for the year 1920, it raised its soybean stocks view to 580 million bushels and bumped its wheat ending stocks view to 978 million bushels. So plenty of grain in the grain bins on farms across the country and in other grain bins in the world. China did buy some more U.S. soybeans today. The private exporters confirmed to the Department of Agriculture that China did buy 136,000 tons of soybeans for delivery this year, mainly from Gulf ports, but also from ports on the West Coast. That's your money on 720 WGN.
1248 WGN. Grubhub's been an interesting topic this COVID virus season here in Chicago and I guess around the country. Amy Guth, business reporter, has some thoughts and stories or some news about that. We spoke about it earlier a little bit with John Najarian, Amy, and What do I know? I thought that since Grubhub was getting kicked around so much, people would not be so interested in that stock. But I guess I'm wrong, huh?
Well, according to Bloomberg, some people close to this deal say that Uber is in advanced talks to buy Grubhub. And, of course, stock went up on that news. We saw that reflected pretty much right away. Shares of Grubhub jumped about 29% to 60.50, while Uber rose about 6% on that news. You know, here's two companies that at various points and for various reasons have been a bit vilified sometimes in the court of public opinion. But this conversation is happening. Uber is making moves to shut down Uber Eats in certain countries and regions where it's underperforming, where it makes up in total about 1% to 4% of its revenue. But it comes at a really interesting time because reportedly this deal could close as early as this month. And again, these kind of deals sometimes do fall through at the last minute for various reasons, and that could happen. But according to the report, this could happen as early as this month. Meanwhile, locally, what I think is just kind of really interesting but purely coincidental timing is the city has rolled out new rules on food delivery apps. So starting on May 22nd, Lightfoot and the Department of Business Affairs and Consumer Protection, these new rules say you will have to get a lot more disclosure when you order. So what that's going to look like is basically like an itemized cost breakdown of every transaction, including the menu price of the food, sales, any other kind of tax, delivery charge, tip, commission, service fee paid by the restaurant, all this kind of stuff. So I've taken a look at, there's a receipt from a restaurant owner who it was kind of their monthly invoice from Grubhub, and it's about 14 or 15 itemized items long. It's a pretty long receipt, but customer receipts are going to start looking that way because so many small businesses have said, hey, this is really, at a time when we really need every penny we can get, a huge commission is going to these delivery apps. So it's a really interesting moment where Uber is pulling back on Uber Eats a little bit, potentially acquiring Grubhub, and the city is saying, okay, starting in late May, your Grubhub receipts are going to look different so that you, the consumer, can make a more informed choice about ordering through an app or ordering direct from the restaurant.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the city getting involved in that way. You remember one of Lori Lightfoot's first press conferences when the crisis broke was with executives from Grubhub, and they were talking about how they're going to work in partnership to get food from restaurants to people and help everybody. But
that's right.
Sounded like they were mostly helping themselves. Maybe a little more transparency will bring some pressure upon them to lower the cost to the restaurants because this is not sustainable for the restaurants.
Right. CEO, Grubhub CEO Matt Maloney said just last week that he was really frustrated. He said, you know, municipalities hear 30% take rate and they think that that's what we're taking from restaurants, but it doesn't quite break down that way. So he says, you know, this is about, I need to educate people a little bit better of how this works and exactly what restaurants get for this. Meanwhile, small restaurants are saying, hey, I almost end up losing money, but the order comes in through Grubhub. So a lot of back and forth there. This has been going for a while. New York City had a huge battle last year over this very thing. Restaurants saying, hey, it's really not worth it to us. We only have a 3% to 5% margin as an industry. Kind of that's the average. That's cutting into it. So after May 22nd, I suspect we're going to see a lot of shifts here, especially if this deal closes and Uber acquires Grubhub.
You could see how they could consolidate things too. If Uber buys Grubhub, I'm just reading from an article you sent us, and that is Uber's revenue from restaurant food deliveries rose by more than 50% to $819 million on a yearly basis in the recently reported first quarter. They're making almost $1 billion on food delivery. Wow, that's a staggering amount of money. It would make sense for them all to be under one tent.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge, huge sector of industry. It is huge business, especially right now when fewer people are going out, more people are relying on delivery. So what that consolidation looked like, I think, would be really, really interesting just to watch of how that goes.
What's the news with Glassdoor's Chicago office?
Yeah, so Glassdoor, we knew they were going to make cuts. Late last week, it was Thursday morning, we knew they had notified the state that there would be some layoffs. We did not know exactly where that was going to be, but now we have learned that they're going to cut about 194, so almost 200 of their more than 300 local jobs here. And, you know, this is yet another tech company locally that we're seeing, you know, really, really get hit. Now, interestingly, Glassdoor, which is based in San Francisco, they added some space in Fulton Market about a year ago and made a big announcement. We're doubling down. We're going to add 500 jobs. We're hiring up, which is something we saw a lot of tech companies do. Say, hey, the talent for tech companies in Chicago is really significant. So we really want to put in some roots here. We saw Uber put an office. We saw all these companies build out offices here. And Glassdoor was one of them. And so with this plan to expand in Chicago, they received some economic initiatives, though they haven't claimed any of those yet. They got a little over $6 million in economic initiatives, but they are making these cutbacks. They're scaling back. Groupon is another one. They're in the process of cutting 2,800 jobs, about half of its workforce. Some of those, about 300 of those, are also in Chicago. GoGo, which is the, you know, where you get Wi-Fi when you're on a plane, when you're traveling, they're furloughing 60% of its workforce. That's about 600 jobs. So we're really seeing a moment where we were really booming and a lot of tech companies from both coasts were investing in Chicago. And now we're really seeing some impact of just the economic moment that we're in.
What about brick and mortar retail?
Now, this is a really, really tough moment for brick and mortar retail. So there is a kind of an industry watchdog and data service called Melifini and Associates. They've been tracking the retail industry since the mid-late 1980s. And they noted that in the 2008-09 recession, retail went down about 8.7%. And they're saying this is, we're looking at maybe 10% a 10% drop in local retail sales this year. And even that may be optimistic. They're saying there are so many factors impacting retail right now. There's people worried about their own pocketbook, so there's less kind of discretionary spending. There's stay-home orders. Fewer people want to necessarily go to stores. But this is happening at a time when, for the last couple of years, retail has already been really spreading about Amazon and you know, Walmart and Wayfair and these big retail giants that can ship things really quickly without people having to leave their homes. Retail was already, especially the brick and mortar space, was already really struggling. And we've seen some closures. We've seen some companies scale back their retail, you know, operations in the physical sense and go more online. But now with all of this, this is really going to be really rough. So some analysts that were looking at this data and offering their insight on it, you know, really kind of said, this might be the death knell for a lot of brick-and-mortar retail. This is going to fundamentally change the way we do our shopping. Now, one really notable exception, that is the grocery space, because people are cooking at home more right now. They're venturing out just for the grocery store, if at all. So we're seeing grocery being pretty stable and up in some respects, but still we're starting to see people get grocery delivery. Even though earlier this year we saw Peapod scaling back locally, we're still seeing people rely on things like Instacart to get their groceries so they don't have to leave their homes. So that's going to be the next one to watch. But things like clothes shopping and home goods and things like that, it is really going to be rough. And I will be watching that with great interest, what the data says about consumer spending there.
And we'll be listening for your reports on that. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.
Business reporter Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch.